You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Yeah. Put on a... Yeah, Dropkick Murphy.
There you go.
This is Booker T and the MGs back when we were kids rolling around. The anyway, it's Thursday, so you're going to hear from Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny. Tim from his home in Texas. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great, Mac. Thank you very much.
And Jeff, getting up early so we can actually record this because I'm on the East Coast. And Tim's in the Midwest, so that's easy. Actually, he's not in the Midwest. He's in Texas. And the state of the World Series losers and Jeff in California. So thanks for getting up early, Jeff.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Big news, obviously, this week is the killing of Mr. Al Baghdadi and Long Wanted. And so we ought to start there. Tim, you can start. When you saw that, and you know, I'm sure you've read about it and whatnot. Is there any part of the entire operation that that intrigues you any more than any other?
No. What I liked about it was the use of sending guys in to shoot him in the face rather than sending a drone. I liked that decision-making process a lot, not only because of the sensitive site exploitation of it, but you're sending a message to our adversaries that when we come for you, we're going to come and with dogs on point. Boy, if I don't like the sounds of that. And I'm kind of a fan of the Delta guys. I've dealt with them a couple of times, just a few times. And the fact that they did it means that we'll probably never hear anything about the operation again. Because I will never be able to praise those guys enough. They truly are a different breed of cat.
Right. How about you, Jeff? Any part of that operation intrigue you any more or catch your eye, break squelch for you?
Yeah, well, I have to tell you, I agree with Tim on what he said about Delta. I 100% concur. And to me, it was classic, Delta Force Rangers isolate and contain the objective, it looks like. And then the Rangers went in and, accomplished the mission. To me, what's intriguing is how they got there. And so besides the diplomatic aspects of, notifying the other people who are in that battle space area and then flying almost all the way. I mean, it's closer to the coast of the Med than it was to the border with Iraq.
Yeah.
And it seems to me, I know that the special ops guys are using Ospreys now. That'd be a good way to do it, as far as getting there quick and everything. I don't know if that's what they did. But if they didn't, and I think maybe even if they did, refueling would be an issue, at least on the way back for sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that'd be and that's a dicey operation in itself at night when you're in territory that you don't own, So, yeah, I was impressed with that. And what jumps out at me is getting there, the blend between diplomacy and the sheer engineering of it, and the right using the right platforms.
Yeah, I'm, and again, the problem with the aftermath of this is, we're talking about all open source stuff, right? So it's what they want to leak out. I thought pretty interesting that they had somebody close to him, feeding them information and actually stealing his underwear so they could get his DNA, so they could make sure that they PID'd him, they positively identified him. And, so I that's pretty interesting. And to me, right, a lot of people, now that story is out, looking around their inner circles in the region going, all right,
yeah.
who's not related to me?
Who's a rat?
Yeah, who's you out? This thing's going to get about 75% smaller. Anybody who's not a blood relative is out. So that, to me, that was kind of interesting that we had infiltrated that deep because that's always been an issue. And then, the other part is the sensitive site exploitation thing that Timmy mentioned. And, that's one of the things that in my time in Iraq in 2006, I mean, I worked at night and that's why Larry Nicholson brought me. He said, we're going to do a lot of stuff at night. I need a grown up. Will you come? And I said, yeah. And I didn't even know what he's talking about because he couldn't tell me over the phone. And then we got there and we were looking for Zarqawi. And so this is what I, and this is, I did this stuff like every night, you know, lining up the ground QRFs that would support them, you know, clearing battle space, making sure the Iraqi soldiers wouldn't shoot our guys when they go booming in and all that stuff. And so the complexity of it, as Jeff said, it's pretty sophisticated stuff. And, but the sensitive site exploitation, because I thought what's interesting is now you've heard in subsequent days, his second in command got, you know, is now dead. And that comes, in my opinion, from when they got on the ground, right? There's different elements of this assault force. As Jeff said, the Rangers essentially cordon the area, right? And then the Delta guys go booming in. And they've been watching this thing, and they've got satellites, and they've got guys watching the satellites talking to individual team members. He's at spot Yankee. He just turned left. You know, but, and they're like, and they're, that's how, I mean, that's the kind of shit we can do, and it's awesome. And then you have the sensitive site exploitation and guys that are booming in, like, right behind those guys. And then they are taking computers, hooking them up to electronic devices, sucking them dry, and then sending that shit, right? To analysts that are standing by, because there's other teams queued to go look for other dudes who we're going to find via the phone numbers in the phone, right? The IP links in the computers. And then you're in the pursuit phase of this, right? And then it's like, they're going to run and every guy they yoke up, right, is going to yield additional, right, into electronic information that allows you to get other people. And then we have people that are listening. And they get nervous and they start talking in a way they normally did. Now, I would think that by now they would learn that, look, when this shit happens, go silent, throw your phones away and run. But they don't always do that. You know, our instincts are to talk and emit. And so I thought that, you know, that sensitive side exploitation stuff and then the pursuit, right? And then, I mean, they will run this thing hard for, you know, I'd say probably a couple months as they continue just to knock guys over and pursue and really dismantle the whole upper echelon of ISIS there if they can, you know, if they get that kind of intel, and I assume that they have.
Yeah, and then it's also all the stuff in the news lately, there's probably different things lighting up regarding cell phones and computer traffic that may just ostensibly go dead, Mac, when this stuff comes out. Like when they first got a hold of the, you know, some of the Turkish and even Russian, you know, formations that are in there, and then to something that's usually up with every time the president says he's pulling people out of Syria and stuff, and all of a sudden that goes black, then where that was is an indicator, you know? It's like whatever's different, you know, is something to listen to, something to look at for sure.
Right.
You know what's remarkable? What's remarkable is when Jeff and I were on active duty enlisted, we could not have done this. The Desert One, the attempt on Tehran, we literally couldn't get the airplane down because of the different airframes involved, pilots flying, Navy pilots flying Air Force birds because Navy birds couldn't. It was a cluster. And now we've gotten to, and back then a sensitive site exploitation team would have been people in D.C., who were taking days to go through this stuff, days. And now they're literally got enough bandwidth to blast that stuff out. And there's people going through it and computers going through the numbers almost instantly. That is so phenomenal. I mean, it's inconceivable to us from not that, you know, when we were back in the 1979, 1980 time frame. I mean, it's phenomenal. It really is.
Those guys, that Desert One, that Desert Eagle thing, they had marine bulk fuelers in the middle of the Iranian desert by themselves with the bladders spread out and everything waiting to be able to refuel people and stuff that had to be dried up because of exactly that. If we had Ospreys, that thing might have turned out a lot different in Iran. You're right. You had marine pilots flying Navy CH. They weren't CH-50, they're MH-53s, and they weren't like, you know, they weren't like, you know, the big 53s. They weren't like the, you know, 53 Echoes, man. They were, you know.
It wasn't a platform those guys knew how to. Well, it was such a fiasco, and now we do that stuff seamlessly. And it's a remarkable achievement. I just can't say enough about that. And I like making it personal. I like going into guys' house and shooting them as opposed to droning them. I think that's an important thing message to send.
Well,
yeah, they can't say, oh, you killed a baby, and then they can't do that then when you own.
Well, and the other part of that is, again, look, we could whack them with a missile, right?
Yeah.
And not risk anybody's life, but, he's been there long enough. He's communicated with enough people. That's what we want because, getting him is great. But you know what? He's been marginalized for months because of the way we can pursue somebody, right? So like bin Laden, he's isolated. He's radioactive and he can only, he's got to work through couriers to his detriment. And he's got to be very selective if he gets on the electronic spectrum because the entire world is looking for this dude, right? And so, how much can he participate? But that which he has in his electronic devices allows us to lop off the whole, to lop off that bitch at the neck, right? And then down into the chest cavity. And so it it's going to retard them. Getting him by himself to me is more symbolic than real. Yeah, it's great. He's dead, but rolling up his deputies and then continuing to bore down the spinal column of that motherfucker. That's what makes you really, 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 really like yourself.
And the thing is, in the movies, like in Jason Bourne movies, when he gets burned, he throws away everything and he's got a plan. He's off to Marseille or something like that. In real life, I don't think the people in those networks, they may think they have a plan for if somebody suddenly goes silent or the head gets killed, but their inclination is going to be to try to talk to somebody because they're going to freak. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so you know networks are going to light up,
right?
And then other networks that you've been looking at are going to shut down, and that tells you everything you need to know right there too, like Jeff pointed out. So this is a win-win. Even though the guy was marginalized as a leader, he was still he was in our crosshairs, and if you're in our crosshairs, you should get the guys in the middle of the night shooting you in the face. Because people get used to drones. Drones are like a hurricane, They just come over. Some people get killed. You can get used to drones, but you can't get used to somebody coming in the middle of the night and shooting you in the head. That kind of stuff is you just can't get used to that.
For the record, though, we did not shoot him in the head.
No. Yeah, I know he went down and blew himself up, okay. But I mean metaphorically, it's coming for you.
Right,
yeah, humans coming for you are more terrifying than ordnance coming at you, I think.
I got it.
His head popped up.
Yeah.
That's how they ID'd him, with the facial recognition and DNA. But yeah.
What'd you say? His what?
His head popped off clean, just popped off as if like a doll's head, and. That's how they ID'd him. They did facial recognition and they did DNA up from the skull itself.
Yeah, we have some shit that nobody talks about, that when they whip it out, you're like, whoa, just like the sensitive side exploitation stuff.
Yeah.
And the way I learned about that, in fact, Dave Furness is a part of it. Dave is, Fallujah 2006. Now, north of Fallujah is a city by the name of Karma.
Karma, right.
Yeah, and Dave was a battalion commander. Dave Furness was a battalion commander of 1st Battalion, 1st Marines, and that was his battle space. And so, on one of these nights, right, all of a sudden you get a phone call from SEAL team whatever. And, hey, we've got one of our targets pinging in Karma. All right, got it. I said, and I'd say, hey, 1-1 is like 4 blocks from there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know. So I call 1-1 to deliver the bad news. Hey, there's going to be a soft hit, target empty frat, stand by. I'm going to send you the con op. You got to QRF it. Make sure the Iraqis, herd cats, right? Make sure that they go weapons safe and tight. And so all the stuff you have to do to make it safe for these guys to go in and what they do. So then I get a phone call from Dave. Hey, would you tell these assholes that we could walk down the street and yoke these guys up? And then the blowback from the soft guys is always, hey, they don't have our sensitive side exploitation stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And we have guys that do specifically that. So we know that they go get them. That's not specifically what we want. Okay. And there's a time, you know, element to this. So when you see, I think in the movie, the Bin Laden thing, you know, them throwing computers and in bags and taking out, you know, that's in fact, they do that. But there's also another element where they're sucking stuff into electronic devices that they attach to those things. And that's what, you know, Timmy, you know, alluded to it. I mean, that stuff's going quick to analysts who are going to action other special assets to go get these guys. And so that's how I learned about that stuff. And I was like, I got to be friends with these guys, right? I'm like, so could you explain like sensitive side exploitation to me? and they said, not really. Let me put it this way though. We have some crazy shit. We have some crazy shit, and the NSA has crazy shit, and we feed both DOD, which feeds NSA, and the whole, you know, the whole nine yards, so that we can find other dudes that are in those cell phones. But we got to get on them now, because you would think, and back to Timmy's point about, yeah, you know, they probably talked about this. When somebody gets whacked, you know, ditch your cell phone, but are they going to do it without making phone calls, right? And if the flash to bank for them finding out is 6 hours, right? Is it 2 hours? Is that too late? Now we're on them, especially the big guys. Now we're looking specifically for three phone numbers, for three identities, and we find them. And now there's, you know, maybe a drone that's parked over that dude now. And now wherever he goes, we're going to know, and we're going to get him within an hour. So. Yeah, so the sensitive side exploitation stuff is, like you say, when you think back to the Desert One event, and now you think of the capabilities we have, pretty interesting. But let me tell you, nobody came out of that raid bigger than that dog. Okay.
Yeah.
and an appropriate symbol given the target.
Those dogs, those dogs save lives, man. Those dogs are incredible weapons. And, you know, now you breach a wall and the first thing through the wall is a dog. Who's a no shit weapon. And if there's anything on the other side that's bad, that, you know, and that dog is like lightning on to his throat to rip off his head.
And that's a visceral advantage. I mean, because any human is going to pale in the specter of a vicious dog, you know, especially though people out in that part of the world, they don't like dogs. Right. They're not like, there's no, Lassie ain't a big show.
You hear it in the news, right? He is the son of a dog. Right? And you hear that. I mean, dogs in shoe bottoms, right? That's bad.
Yeah. Hey, listen, when I was living in Jalalabad and in Lashkargah, everywhere I lived in Afghanistan, I had a dog. I would get local dogs as puppies, and they would get used to my interpreters, but they instinctively hated all Afghans. And so at night, like in the area where my bedroom was, the dogs would be in there, and if any Afghan came in there at night, they would get that shit chewed out of them. So they never would. And that was part of, to this day, I can't sleep well unless there's a dog in the house. You know, I love those things. Oh, absolutely. But I mean, it was one of the strategies that I used when I was out, you know, living in the Ville. But the thing is that the Afghans really, they don't particularly like dogs. The Arabs, as I recall, they hate them. And so that's quite a thing. And Jeff's absolutely right. Psychologically, you can't stop the dog. Maybe you could if you're good with a shotgun, but getting your wits about you and employing that weapon effectively against the dog, you can't, it's going to close the distance on you no matter what.
Like light.
You're not going to hit it.
Right. So all of a sudden,
there's nothing you can do.
All of a sudden, it's boom. And these dogs are bred and trained for this. And so if you train 30 dogs that do this, these are the three dogs that are above all others, right? The wall, the hole in the wall is breached. The smoke isn't clear, right? They've got ear protection on the dogs, right, for the explosion. Right. It comes off, and they go through that hole like lightning. And you're disoriented by the explosion, looking around like, what the fuck? All of a sudden, you see this flash, and all of a sudden, literally – your head is being ripped off your body by a dog. No fucking joke.
That's why he was whimpering and hollering. Oh my God, a dog. You know what we and it's like the only thing as smart as a dog is a pig, and they hate pigs even worse. I don't know why we haven't trained pigs to like drop them by parachute.
Are pigs smart?
I could see them in the moonlight oscillating on their parachutes while the theme to The Empire Strikes Back plays, and they land and they go after fucking terrorists.
Big fat ass pigs with their squirrely tail coming out of the sky for you.
They got like a jacket.
Hey, wild boars down here will chew your ass up if you let them get close to you.
Yeah,
they're huge.
I'm thinking like a pink piglet though. When Jeff was talking, I wasn't thinking wild boar.
Yeah, really.
Charge of the boar brigade. That'd be something.
Pigs worse than the Muslims is people in Texas because they're being overrun. Tim, you probably know, but you know, my buddy's like at war with the pigs out there by Dallas, the wild hogs, you know.
Yeah, that causes a lot of damage.
They're smart though. They're smart.
Very
smart.
Anything else about the raid that breaks squelch for you, Tim?
I am not going to condemn the president's taunting and talking about dying like a dog and stuff on Twitter, only because you only get one diva president in a lifetime, and he's ours. And so the fact that he did that, although as distasteful as it might be to you and I, actually to you, I kind of liked it. The fact that he's rubbing their face into it, I like that for whatever reason. I know Reagan with his tear down this wall comment with that, everybody was appalled at that. And this isn't anything like that, obviously, but I don't know. But we've got Trump. He's going to do what Trump does. And I think it's hysterical when he starts taunting people like that.
The guy talks. He talks more than any three presidents. You know, when he's getting on the helicopter, when he's like, you know, he talks too much probably. I mean, this whole thing with the Ukraine thing might be a manifestation of that. However, the guy does, like he said early on in the campaign, hey, why are we always telling people how many people we got here and how many people we got there? Shouldn't we be more ambiguous about what we're doing with our military? And I think to myself, you know, he makes a big deal out of announcing about these people being pulled out of Syria. And you come to find out it isn't as drastic as it was first, as it first was communicated. And then, bang, this thing happens like a week and a half later. And, so you wonder, you know, maybe where most people shut up to be ambiguous, Trump just puts a shitload of, he puts 6 to 8 round bursts of,
of confusion there. And let me tell you, as Timmy mentioned, I don't think it's necessary. But whatever, it's him. And the other thing I'll say, I don't think that what ultimately happened in Syria, you know, I think his initial, what you heard from him, it was what we were doing, which is getting out. Now we have tank companies in Syria, right? So it starts as, everybody's leaving, right? And getting rocks and potatoes thrown at the MRAPs and whatnot as they barrel through. Then it's like, wait a minute. Why don't we send some tanks companies? So the net is we have more in Syria now. Protecting the oil fields and shit like that. So whatever.
Final
observation that the president did by elevating that dog and making that dog front and center of this raid, because you can't do that with the operators, obviously. I think that was a genius move.
Well, not with Delta Force. Bomb the SEALs up there, they'd be all about it.
They'd be like,
hey, Mr. President, do you want some selfies?
Yeah.
But they got Afghanistan. The Delta guys got Iraq, is my understanding. So that wasn't going to happen. And you won't hear from them probably ever again, which is exactly the way it's supposed to be.
Well, no, we talked before that, you know, the Delta guys whacked between 200 and 400 Russian little green men who were getting ready to attack them with tanks and tubed artillery. And you haven't heard shit about that.
Nope.
Yep. Like, what? So the question is, like, if you kill 400 Russians in the night and nobody says a word, did it really happen?
Did it really happen? Like, if a Russian falls in the forest and nobody hears it, did he really fall?
Did he really fall? Well, if you ask the Delta guys, no, they didn't. Oh. Nothing happened. So yeah, that part interesting. The what was the other part I was kind of curious about? And you know what Jeff said about the FARP thing. You know, I mean, that's a hard lesson. I'd be curious to see, you know, the guys who planned it. And I mean, echoes. I mean, you know, the gorilla in the room is Desert One. All right, boys, yeah. Look, you know, this thing, we don't want a company of rangers to secure this. You know, we're looking for two companies because we've spread out, right, the rearming points. We need, you know, from the bladders, we need now three times as much hose because.
But I don't think they did that. I don't think, because the Osprey could easily make that
And back. Or do it in the air. Can you?
Yeah. That's what I mean. They do it in the air.
They use the MH-17s. I thought they used this, the MH-17 variant. Those things, they can drink in flight.
Right.
They keep on hitting the tankers on the way over.
Well, so no, they would do the two leg, right? And then did they fly over Israel out to the Med to tank and rendezvous, you know, out there?
And then there's like, they love little birds and they love, they love like Fires platforms, you know, Hilo Fires platform, Cobras. They don't have Cobras, but they got the little birds and they got the Apaches and so forth. I don't know.
I'd be curious if that was part of the package because you now have EW drones, right?
Right.
And you would have every satellite platform watching because those birds with shorter legs, right?
Yeah.
Then that becomes problem getting now. Not that you can't solve that with multiple FARPs en route and whatnot, but it just, it increases.
Yeah, exactly.
Because let me tell you, one of the cool parts is when you say there was no American casualties other than the dog, right? And that dog is now, right, the darling of the entire raid. You know, you're in 2 months, you're going to say, hey, remember when they killed that guy like in October? Oh, you mean the one where the dog got wounded? That's how the raid's going to be known as the one that the dog, not one American.
They didn't have fire support because of that, because they can't aerial refuel.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I think you're right. It will come out probably later.
Did you guys see that video they released of taking out the react force of bad guys with aviation assets? Did you see that?
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, that's part of the.
It looked to me like they got smacked by a gunship, a C-130.
Well, let me tell you, boys, the Rangers and Delta don't go anywhere without Spooky and all the rest of those awesome named AC-130s. And you talk about special. And you know the Rangers, they saw these dudes coming, right? And they were like, we're gonna whack these motherfuckers. It's time for them to get their QRF whack because that's what they used to do to us. And then Spooky rolls in and liquidates them. I'll tell you the other thing. Did you see the pictures of the compound? That shit was moon dust.
Exactly.
That's a nice message to send.
Well, we were talking. I got the news on you.
This one was done the exact right way, in my humble opinion. I just love it.
Hold on. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I mean, while we were talking about this, I got the news on mute and they showed another clip of those guys approaching, night vision stuff, and the compound was intact and good to go. But then you see when they got finished, it was like you said, it was like, was this place? There's no archaeologist in a million years will ever find anything from that, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing. And if you look, there's some pictures, kind of wider angle shots. I saw one that it was a Getty image. Not sure how they got it from a drone or whatever, but. It shows the adjacent compound, supposedly of the militia leader that was housing him. Now that dude's compound is gigantic. I mean, and it's as opulent as anything you've ever been to in your life, right?
Yeah.
And so what would he have Baghdadi staying in? Would it be in like a servant's quarter so nobody would know? I mean, obviously well furnished and well adorned, but you know, to the outward eye, this is one of not the big guy's house. This is, you know, maybe the caretaker's house or something like that. I don't know. Or because if it's in, and it would, but it would have been something akin to what you see in the background, which is a beautiful, you know, mansion that happens to be in this orchard in Syria. And again, I mean, that shit looked like moon dust. Nothing, nunca, nada left. Yeah. And that's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Well, the little, there's a, so if you didn't get the first few messages we sent and you don't understand the significance of the dog, right, who now wears a purple heart, yeah, have some moon dust, bro. My grandmother sent me ashes from when Mount St. Helens erupted.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, she lived in central Washington, and she said it's like snowing here. So she sent me, she sent me some, and that's what that shit reminded me of. Just, it looked like dusty nothingness. But, yeah, well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, talk about CO2 emissions between Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines and Mount St. Helens.
Yeah.
That put more, that took out more CO2 than 10 million, 10 trillion fucking SUVs could ever do.
The, yeah, my grandmother got bless
you're, us. You're supposed to issue a trigger warning before you start laying out facts like that, Jeff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I know. You're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If there's anybody out there who believes in climate change shit, sorry.
The I have to tell you guys, I've been on the road the last 2 days and was in Colorado Springs on Tuesday and was supposed to speak for, I was telling Timmy before we came on, was supposed to speak for 2 hours. It went 4 hours and 15 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Academy guys or the Fort Carson guys?
No, it was the Naval Academy. Air Force having their General Officer Symposium there. And so it was a group that was looking at suicide, chaired by the Chief of Staff of the Air Force's wife, Dawn Goldfein. And I mean, their Air Force on a pace. And in fact, they reported in the brief that they had 61 suicides last year. That they're at 118 as of 2 days
ago. Wow.
So they will more than double, more than 100%, increase in suicide. And they are beside themselves. But I would say this. I think listening to the guy who spoke in front of me, which is a gentleman by the name of Tudor, who's a JTAC guy and a good dude. And I said, look, you're going to think we rehearse this. But I've never met Tudor in my life. And I've spoken to him, and he's helping me get into the Air Force, and I said, but you're going to see, he's on the right path. You don't need another program, okay? Right. What you do is you need to tell the truth. Everybody's got to play, and this thing comes alive in your monthly counseling the way you counsel. And and we were talking, and let me tee this one up for you two guys. Now, when I look at this, I used to get to counseling, in my month, some months. Sometimes I didn't do it. Now, when I look at this, and our culture's changed, that is weapons maintenance on your primary weapon, right? And to the extent that you know them, and I don't mean just, we've all heard know your Marines forever. But I look back, I didn't know my Marines. And so, to me, that's where it starts. If you know them and you care about them and you enable what they want, you're going to have a group in your unit that wants to stay in the Marine Corps and make it a career. You're going to have others that are in for 4 years. So why, when you do PME or you're doing training, you can bring stuff in for guys who are getting out, resume writing, how to use LinkedIn, how to use Veterati, right? And and what? You're engaged in their lives. You're making them better. You're helping them to be successful in life. And then you have, different speakers for guys who want to stay in. And look, you can go to either group. I don't care, right? This is about winning and getting better at life. And I'm in it, for everybody, right? And I thought, now I think about it and I'm like, shit, man. I wasn't very good at that. But so my own opinion is that's the solution. Everybody's got to play. And the other thing people have to do is do what Dave Furness did, that to me was so powerful. The third day that we started doing that, he sat through post-traumatic winning and, heard me look at people and say, you've got to tell the truth. And then on the morning of the third day, he stood up and he started talking about the 100 Marines that he's lost and the fact that, when he called every family and he wasn't sure what would come from the other end of the phone. And he said all they were was supportive, but they asked one thing almost universally, and that is please make his sacrifice count for something. And he said, I don't know if Iraq and Afghanistan are going to turn out the way we want them to. And I wonder if they think I lied to them or if they hate me because of it. And he said, you know, every one of those 100 is in my binder that I got when I graduated from VMI that they give me and next to my bed. And I see that all the time. And it causes my heart to hurt. And then he said, but that's not the most traumatic thing in my life. And then he told a story of the weekend he was typing his paper for Command and Staff College when after he had left the basic school. He was at, was it EWS?
He didn't go to WS. He went to the Army.
So it would have been later. So he's typing. And Linda, his wife, who was in an early child development major.
I know what it was, Mac. I don't want to interrupt. But I know it was Dave was one of those guys who went to command and staff, I think. And then he became the CEO of Sacramento. So it was probably while he was there in Quantico in command and staff. That's why
that's what it was.
North. And he stayed in Virginia doing that.
Right.
And
that's he had procrastinated about writing his paper.
Right.
And so she went to visit her folks in Richmond so he could have the weekend by himself to knock this thing out. And he tells the story. And look, and he has to stop. His voice is cracking. And I'm sitting there, right? I've known Dave for 30 years. And I'm sitting there going, he doesn't tell the story to anybody, let alone in public.
Yeah.
And you're so proud of your friends, right? And I keep having those experiences as I bring people that I've met in January. Lance Corporal Matt Kiker and a spouse by the name of Allison introduced it a week ago. And I sat there. I remember when I met these people and what they were struggling with. And now they come back and say, let me tell you how this impacted my life and how it's changed my life. And it's so cool. But it started with Dave. And Dave standing up there telling a story about the doctor calling him and going through the test results. And he said, I can hear the papers shuffling. And he's like, yeah, everything looks good. Everything looks good. And they're talking. And the doctor says, oh, hold on. And Dave's like, what? And he said, she's positive for Fragile X syndrome. And Dave says, I didn't even know what the fuck that was. And so I said, hey, well, what is that? What is that? And he said, it's a form of mental retardation. And he said, it was like somebody hitting me in the chest with a 100-pound bat. Right? And I had to get him the car after I looked it up. And he said, and there's nothing you can do for that. You can't mitigate it. It's genetic. And I had to drive to Richmond and I had to, I had to crush my wife. And he said, but you're watching the impact of that on Marines. And then the week following the class, he calls me and he says, dude, you cannot believe what's going on here. And I said, what? And he said, that class, man, I've been the CG for 6 months. My picture's everywhere. Everywhere I go, nobody makes eye contact, right? They see, if we're in uniform, they obviously salute. But he said, other than that, I work out every morning. Nobody says a word to me. Right? He said, I can't go anywhere now. I can't go anywhere in this space without people coming up to me and some standing in line to talk to me. I can't get through a workout at the gym now. He said, he goes, Mac, he said, look, I've given good classes in my life. Okay. So I know what one is. He said, and I'm funny. I'm like, okay, you're not like that funny though. Okay. I'm funny. You're really not. And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry, bro. So I said, Dave, the class no doubt is powerful, right? But what you did when you went open kimono, they didn't think they could relate to you. And now they do. You're a normal guy who deals with normal shit. And that's the other thing that has to happen. You can't stand up in an audience of post-traumatic winning and tell them you've got to talk about your shit. You've got to demonstrate it. You've got to do it. And so to me, if you'll do those things, if you'll know them more, if you'll be brutally honest with them about what you struggle with, and then after that, if you'll sit down, right, and care about them and love them, To me, they don't make the facing movement to the door that leads to very destructive behavior because they've got people to talk to and their life is going in the right direction and people are teaching them because they know them, they know their goals. So to me, it doesn't take a new program. A lot of the stuff is already resident, but anyway. Your thoughts
well,
on
you
that,
know,
guys?
Not to argue, but...
Go ahead.
The truth is, most of the guys don't want to talk to the general, don't want to, you know, talk about themselves or anything like that. But some do. And in doing what he did, he got that some do bunch who used to be afraid of peer pressure and stuff. Now they will. Yeah, because most of them, I know I was an enlisted guy for almost 12 years. The last fucking thing I want to do is tell anybody any of my shit.
Right.
But we had guys who, you know, in those days, you didn't have an internet or anything like that. So we just, to pass the time, we talked to each other, you know? Everybody knew each other a lot better. I mean, and so I think, you know, that was some of the things that's changed with technology, and not in a good way. Most of the things with technology are better. But that's one of the things that and a bunch of other things that you've identified, you know, have done that. But Dave is the type of guy who, you know, I saw him. I'll tell you what, man. I thought Dave was a great IOC instructor and a great infantry officer when we were captains. But then when I saw him as a CO-11, I'm the three of the MU, and he's the CO. The CO of the MU we had is a hard guy to work for. And he was hardest, because he's an infantry guy, on the GCE guy, on Dave. And then going into Iraq and watching him day to day, my esteem for Ness went way, way higher. You know what I mean? He was funny, Mac. You should hear his shit to his men, like his pre-libo going into Bahrain speech. I thought even I couldn't do better than that, you know, because he gave this, you know, if you want to put your part of yourself into the fetid swamp that are some of these walking hookers, you know, it was a scream. So, you know, he always gets better. You
know? Right. No. Well, you know, that's what I love about, I mean, what's always been, and I'll speak for all of us, our extended group of friends, you know, Paul Kennedy, you know, yeah. Dave Furness, Tim, Jeff, and a whole bunch of other guys that I'm not going to name. But what we've always had in common is one, an intellectual curiosity coupled with a really stupid sense of humor, right?
Yeah.
But this incredible love of Marines, right? Yeah. And the Marine Corps too, but more Marines than the institution, because for us to make a difference in their lives when you see their selflessness and courage is there's no question about that. That's what we do. And then like sitting, you know, me sitting there that day watching my friend for 30 years get up in front of 1,000 Marines, right? And just tell the truth, knowing the impact that it would have. And I tell people now, I mean, I've done this now for more than probably somewhere between 31 and 35,000 people. And, you know, and I talk about all this shit that happened in my not only my personal life and then my Marine Corps life. And I've never had anybody send me an email saying, you know what, you ought to be embarrassed the way you stand up there and talk about your life and all that. You're bullshit, man. You're just a joke. Nobody's ever sent me that, which is to me a powerful, you know, statement in that, you know, you would think in 33,000 people have seen it, some asshole would write that. But I think that's how powerful the truth is. And when you tell the truth, as I say in the thing, it lands with a thud and it needs no salesman, and people respect that. And to see a general officer do that. And I will tell you, my experience with most general officers is they won't do that. They'll stand up and they'll admonish you to do it, but they'll keep their shit private. And that's why it doesn't resonate. And that's why he does. And so it's really cool.
But the thought of a commanding general of a division unable to go places because people are coming up to talk to him, I would have run away. I wouldn't want to be anywhere near a commanding general when I was in the infantry. I think that's hysterical. And I'm so proud of Dave for that to be. But listen to this, though. You guys ever hear of a guy named Fazil Saeed Al-Muttar? You ever hear that name?
I read about it in the news the other day.
No. Wasn't one of these guys killed. This guy was an Iraqi. He just became an American citizen last week.
He was
on the Dave Rubin show. This is an Iraqi, a really well-educated human rights activist. But he spent an hour and a half on a Dave Rubin show yesterday talking about how much better Iraq is because of the Americans. He says, you have no idea how positive and how different things are. Not that he feels it's safe enough for him to go back. But it was interesting in that Dave's lament about was it all worth it. I tell you, your average Afghan would say they're a heck of a lot better off after 18 years of us flailing around in there. For the most part. I mean, a vast majority of them.
I was thinking about that. You know, why are we continuing to pay the fucking price for the stupid fuck math shit that the fucking Brits did? Right? Let's just convene the United Nations and say, okay, look, we're redrawing fucking lines. Okay. You get this, you get this. We're going to make an oil revenue sharing agreement. It's going to go like this. It's going to be enforced by the United Nations. The Kurds are going to, you know, the largest ethnic minority in the planet with no land. You're going to get some and we're going to be done with this shit. Everybody stay within your fucking boxes. Right.
I absolutely would advocate for it. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
The fucking Brits, man. The fucking Brits.
I must add that the Kurds are sitting on land in Anatolia that they now claim is hereditary, that was once occupied by Armenians. Mm-hmm. And the way that the Armenians got driven off that land was less than pleasant.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of history back there. Yeah. It's a lot of confusing things going on. Let Russia go ahead and jump in the middle of this and mediate it, as far as I'm concerned. I'm a little disappointed we've got tanks and oil fields, for crying out loud. I know that that's an expensive boondoggle, but what are we going to do?
I've got to say that never – I mean, you know, it would be great if the UN had some glimmer of competency. Right. But everywhere they go, they make worse.
I know.
I mean, and so it's like
– I was hoping you wouldn't call me out on that little flaw in my logic when I threw the UN in there. It's like the enabling agency.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's like that's how it got fucked up. I mean, they're like, what could go wrong? Sykes and Pico. What could happen?
But you look at all the fucking stupid lines they drew and the wars that have happened because of it. Like, let's go. And so you know, I remember being in Iraq and saying, look, the only way this thing works is if you partition it and share the oil money. Oh, we could never partition it. Why don't you make it a federal republic, each province independent, let them run themselves and share the money. Do it that way then. But they will never fucking play together.
The State Department of the United States will never preside over the dismantling of the nation of Iraq.
All right, then I hope you plan to be here for a billion fucking years fighting, because that's how long it's going to take.
Yeah, that's one thing. They resist the loyalty towards the nation state. They didn't get that Treaty of Vienna shit in Iraq. To them, that's why this so hard to beat this Muslim fundamentalism, because it's trans borders. You know, it's
right.
not a.
Right.
Although I have to tell you,
it's going
to
be around for a long, long time.
Yeah, the Arabs in Iraq, their word for sheep is the same word they use for Lebanese, I think. It's like they can't hardly understand each other. I mean, I fucked that up. Excuse my French. But there is a word that means means like lamb or something, that also means the ethnic, I think, Egyptian. And it's one of those things that they're like, to them, you know, people from Egypt and the other side of the world. We got interpreters, I remember when I was in Iraq, when I first got there, and Colonel Crow had a Egyptian guy as his interpreter, and Bob, my interpreter, Imad, a.k.a. Bob, he comes and he whispers to me, he goes, sir, I don't understand what that guy's saying. I go, what the fuck are you talking about? He's speaking Arabic, man. And he goes, yeah, but he's speaking some kind of weird Arabic.
Arabic's not Arabic.
I was afraid Crow was going to take Bob, because Bob is a really good interpreter. Thank God he didn't. We gave him some old dude, but you know, they have. It is definitely, you know, the borders there are not what drives them for sure.
Let me. I want to. You know, pay Tim a compliment. After I left the Air Force Academy, and what was an awesome day. And I drove and I met somebody that Tim introduced me to. Her name's Nora. And, and Tim went to a weekend thing and told me, hey man, you've got to call her, post-traumatic winning. And Tim is going to have maybe, you know, going to turn, if this works out, a post-traumatic winning into a staple of these weekend events. So Tim, tell everybody what you went to. And then if you could imagine post-traumatic winning, everybody's got a mission when they leave, which is what Timmy told me.
Yeah, and Nora, who runs this thing in out of Denver, is she's a divorced but a former service wife. She designed a program for veterans to take 30 at a time and expose them to outdoor activities, basically get them out of their house, out of their hometowns, get them blending with other veterans, and the exposure to the outdoors and the positive feelings would in theory manifest themselves in feelings of acceptance and talking about things that we don't talk about with other people and get you on your way. And on my particular event, it was a tandem free fall jump and a hike to the Arches National Park, which was quite nice and vigorous, and a rafting trip, which was quite fun because we got hit by thunderstorms. It turned into a survival event. It was fun for me anyway.
Right.
But yeah, it was, I liked it. But but my point was this thing started with the introductions. We started, a lot of people started telling stories and these became more and more emotional, longer and involved. And I thought that was a waste of time and effort. I thought that the very first thing that should have been presented was a post-traumatic winning thing along with the expectation of the attendees that they commit to staying connected to each other and to reach out to other veterans, because otherwise that really, really nice weekend for which I paid not penny, not one penny, is friggin' charity. And I don't need charity because right. I feel strong. There's no programs for people like Nora. And she has, unfortunately, in her past, as she talks about it, right up front, she lost 3 children in childbirth in a row. And that's, I couldn't deal. I mean, oh my God. But there's nothing for people like her, which was my point about the post-traumatic winning. And I had a discussion with her at the end of it because I told her that, quite frankly, I didn't feel that it was very productive, some of the stories, because I people start talking, particularly when you get to the older folks that are back in Vietnam, and they start telling stories that you know from your experience that it didn't go that way. You know, and that's counterproductive in my mind because it just – It pisses guys like me off. I'm like kind of like the gunner in that respect to you.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear that all the time. It pisses me off
too. Oh yeah. And God bless them. Maybe their memory, that is their memory that they've warped over years. Who knows? My point being that you could get a lot more out of it if you expected of the participants on the day that they showed up. Our expectations are that you're going to take this information and you're going to use it, and we're going to get back with you at the 6-month mark, at the 12-month mark, and we're going to keep track and see if you're reaching anybody, if this stuff is working. Just, you know, because outside of that, any metrics that you're measuring are meaningless. You know, your pre and post event questionnaires, they're meaningless, because who's not going to feel better after you survive a parachute jump? That's always a lot of fun, right?
Right.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
But I just want to say, well done, man, because,
No,
but if it works, and, you know, Nora's going to do that thing in all 50 states. And again, every one of those guys will go back to a community with a mission that can infect other people with this positive vision of what we as veterans can contribute to our communities and the nation post service. And it's what you can do after trauma enters your life, where you can you use that as a trampoline to go to a different place, but there's only one way to do it, and that's to give of yourself and learn how to live with it. And if you do that, then you can go to this place, and there's no reason why most of us can't go there. So, but I just want to say, nice going, Timmy. Well done.
Well, and the thing is, those that are fortunate enough to participate in these events, I think they don't recognize how lucky they have it. I mean, it is unbelievably generous of peoples, of American peoples, and our various to fund these kind of things, because they're everywhere,
right.
and they're good fun. But But only veterans from the recent conflicts have ever been exposed to this. This is quite unique. And I, like I said, if there's not an expectation made of them for participating, it's charity. And I don't need charity. I'm kind of sensitive about that.
Got it. All right, boys. Yeah. I've got to run. I've got stuff to do today. So anyway, I'd love to stay on and gab. But Jeff, first of all, thanks for getting out of bed early and doing this.
I'm usually up earlier than this anyway.
All right, then we won't hesitate in the future when I'm on the East Coast. But
absolutely.
All right, Timmy, have a good day. Thanks, guys.
See you later, Tim.
Worries, brother.
All right, there you have it. That is Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Actually, now that I think about it, there's not anything else coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it. So if you're just tuning in to the program, right, stand by. I think. Oh. Yeah, hold on. Stand by for this.
You're listening to.
No, stand by for this. There you go. So, hour one today, me from Quantico, right? And you heard about my different adventures and how things are going and the post-traumatic winning tour that I'm on. So we'll talk about that and talk about a little bit of the news. And more and more news continues to break out and about the raid. And so you'll hear that. And then if you caught this tail end of this, don't touch that dial. You'll hear Jeff and Tim talking about the al-Baghdadi raid and giving their thoughts on that. So on that note, I'm off to go speak, so have a great day. On a Thursday, live from Quantico, All Marine Radio is over and out.